If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Investor fears of contagion in the banking sector hit Deutsche Bank.
Deutsche Bank is caught up in this domino effect that started really with Silicon Valley Bank and spread to others in the US, then to Credit Suisse. And it's basically like investors getting really nervous and looking for, you know, the next weak link in the banking system.
And big oil companies are turning to North Africa.
This is coming as energy demand from Europe soars in the wake of the war in Ukraine. Many of these companies were slow to develop their businesses in North Africa because of political risks that they saw. But now oil executives are telling us it is worth the risk.
Plus, could a new twist solve a cookie conundrum? It's Friday, March 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. It was another turbulent week for global markets as the sell-off in bank stocks continued, suggesting that strains in the financial system have yet to be resolved. Upheaval that began with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and two other U.S. lenders earlier this month spread to Europe, with Credit Suisse's forced sale to UBS last weekend. Today, troubles at Deutsche Bank loomed large for investors. Shares fell to their lowest level since last fall, before regaining some ground later in the day. Our markets reporter Patricia Kausman says investors are nervous and on the lookout for the next possible weak link in the global banking system.
We are in a crisis or in a situation where investors are reacting first and then asking questions later. And what we saw with Credit Suisse is that while it was already a troubled bank, people just freaked out, decided to take the money out within days, and the bank collapsed. So the lesson that we are learning is that these things are happening so quickly that sometimes banks that you think would be able to survive and weather a crisis are just like falling like dominoes. Deutsche Bank is a systemic bank that has businesses in the US and other parts of the world. It's huge in Germany, which is a country, as we know, that is very big and whose government is pretty strong. And to be sure, we are nowhere near the idea of like Deutsche Bank really, really being to deep trouble.
Shares of Deutsche Bank in Frankfurt ultimately ended the day down. In the U.S., all three major indexes ended the week with gains. The Nasdaq was up the most at around 1.7%. Meanwhile, the ongoing bank stress is making it tougher for big and small companies to access credit. March is typically a busy month for new corporate debt financing. But in fact, no companies with investment-grade credit ratings sold any new bonds from March 10th through March 17th. That's according to PitchBook LCD. It's the first week in March without a new high-grade bond sale since 2013. And the market for new junk bond sales has largely stalled this month, while no companies have gone public on the New York Stock Exchange in more than 2 weeks. In Los Angeles, students returned to classrooms after a three-day labor strike of teachers and staff ended without a contract agreement. Los Angeles is the nation's second largest school district, with 65,000 teachers and support staff. Education reporter Sarah Rondazzo says that while negotiations continue, there is no guarantee that the district will avoid future disruptions.
Both unions are still in negotiations with the district, so the teacher union has had regular meetings, and then coming out of the strike, the employee support staff union has been in a mediation that's been brokered by the Los Angeles mayor, actually, Karen Bass. She stepped in to help try to find a resolution as the strike was going on. And so we haven't heard yet on any deals being reached, but it seems likely, you know, neither side wants this to drag on forever, that hopefully they can come to some kind of accord and get new contracts in place. And if they don't, we could see strikes down the line, but I think nobody wants that to happen.
Mediation continued today with the school staff union that represents bus drivers, cafeteria workers, janitors, teachers' assistants, and other support staff. In business news, Boeing's delays in delivering 787 Dreamliners are again causing problems for American Airlines. The carrier said it would suspend its Philadelphia-Madrid route for a few weeks in May and June, citing the delays. A spokesman for American said the travel disruption could be contained if there aren't further delays. And a Boeing spokeswoman said the company remains focused on stability in its production system. Last year, American trimmed its summer flight schedule in the midst of a halt in Dreamliner deliveries as Boeing was dealing with various manufacturing and regulatory problems. And the debate over the popular app TikTok is escalating. Yesterday, we reported on that fiery hearing in Washington when TikTok's CEO was grilled by lawmakers in a five-hour hearing, with many asking questions about the safety and security of user data. Today, China is hitting back. China's foreign ministry criticized the U.S. for targeting the app and said Beijing would never ask companies to illegally gather data and intelligence from overseas. A spokeswoman also said the U.S. has unreasonably targeted the app without providing evidence that it poses a threat to U.S. national security. Coming up, rising energy demand in Europe has some big oil companies eyeing North Africa. More on their plans after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
North Africa is catching the attention of big oil companies as energy demands grow in Europe. We report exclusively that Halliburton, Chevron, and Eni are among the companies now eyeing the region as energy supplies dwindle during Russia's war in Ukraine. For more on this, I'm joined now by our North Africa correspondent, Chow Dang, in Cairo. Welcome, Chow.
Thanks for having me, Anne-Marie.
So what have you learned about renewed interest in this region from big oil companies?
So we've learned that several oil and gas giants in the U.S. and Europe are ramping up their presence in the region. This includes Halliburton and Honeywell International, which are both in advanced talks with Libya's main state-owned energy firm to sign roughly $1.4 billion worth of deals. And this would be to develop an oil field and refinery in the country. And we also learned that the Italian firm Eni is ramping up. It wants to replace nearly half the gas it was importing from Russia with gas from Algeria.
So why are these companies now seeing opportunities in the region?
Well, this is coming as energy demand from Europe soars in the wake of the war in Ukraine. Many of these companies were slow to develop their businesses in North Africa because of political risks that they saw. But now oil executives are telling us it is worth the risk. In countries like Libya, firms are seeing a more stable political climate because the fighting between local militias has cooled after nearly a decade of civil war.
Which countries in Northern Africa seem to be the primary locations where Western companies are looking to develop operations?
Algeria holds the third largest recoverable shale reserves in the world, and Libya has the largest known oil reserves in Africa. So it's those two North African countries that Western firms are most interested in. Egypt's ability to export gas is limited. It doesn't have pipelines to Europe, but the country does have ambitions to become a hub to distribute energy in the region, and it has been importing more gas from Israel and then exporting liquefied gas on ships to Italy, and it's trying to do more of that.
What are the key challenges now to building up infrastructure in these areas?
Well, these are pretty ambitious projects that Western companies are embarking on. Halliburton is aiming to rebuild an oil field that was destroyed by the Islamic State in 2015. That's one of the biggest deals for the firm in the region in recent years. And Honeywell is aiming to build an entirely new oil refinery in southern Libya. So these are all multi-year projects.
Are most companies in the region interested in this foreign investment?
Yes, you see state-owned firms, especially in Algeria and Libya, very eager to work with Western firms. We interviewed the chairman of Libya's National Oil Corporation, and he had just come from a tour in the U.S. where he was meeting with American firms and with the U.S. Energy Department. He was very eager to say that they want to take advantage of this moment and to replace Russian gas.
Xiao, you mentioned the effect on energy supplies due to the war in Ukraine. What could development in North Africa mean for energy supplies reaching Europe? I'd imagine it would still take a good bit of time to develop the infrastructure needed to get this up and running.
Right. I mean, there is existing pipeline infrastructure from Algeria to Europe and from Libya to Italy, but to start production from new pipelines and new gas fields will take years. So, for example, Eni and Libya agreed to develop two gas fields recently, but the production for that won't start until 2025.
Our North Africa correspondent, Xiao Deng, joining me from Cairo. Thank you so much, Xiao.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
And finally, for all my cookie lovers out there, you can probably relate to this. Twisting an Oreo and ending up with a chocolate wafer and vanilla cream on one half, and just that plain wafer on the other. For those who want that cream on both sides, this is, of course, a problem. Well, don't worry, because researchers are on the case. A team at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology set out to find a way to twist an Oreo so that you end up with cream on both wafers. But our science reporter Eileen Woodward says after twisting more than 1,000 cookies, the results were not that encouraging.
It doesn't matter how fast, how slow, how delicate, how aggressively you twist and pry apart an Oreo, you're gonna end up with all the filling on one wafer about 80% of the time.
But while the cookie might not have crumbled the way they'd hoped, the scientists did have a suggestion for the cookie's makers that might help.
You know how the outside of the Oreo is all textured and it says the word? They were saying if you flip that to the inside so that the cream is touching it, you might get a little bit more of that even split, because right now the cream likes to stick to itself more than it does the wafer because the inside of an Oreo is so smooth. But if you put the texture part on the inside, that smoothness goes away.
All right, well, if you need any other cookie testers, I'm available for the next one. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show is produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Kate Bullivant, with help from Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Kosmides, Falana Patterson, and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us, and we'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.